I'd like to call this meeting for the CBAG executive session. Can we have roll call, please?
Blythe?
Here.
Cathedral City? Coachella?
Here.
Desert Hot Springs?
Present.
Indian Wells?
Present.
Indio?
Present.
La Quinta?
In the round.
Palm Desert?
Here.
Palm Springs?
Here.
Rancho Mirage?
Here.
Riverside County 4th District?
Here.
Agua Caliente, we have a quorum.
Okay, would you please stand and follow me in the pledge of allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I will let Tom explain why I'm sitting here today.
I probably ought to. As you all know, we do not have a chairman of CBAG. We do have a vice chairman, Mr. Gruby with the Agua Caliente, and he's been serving as your acting chairman until the end of this fiscal year. And Jeff Gruby sends his regrets, but he and the rest of the tribal council, I believe, are in Washington, D.C., doing other very important things. So he'll be at the next meeting at the end of the month, but he couldn't be here. So I turned to your favorite colleague here and asked him to chair the meeting because he's the only one that's chaired it before.
Out of all of us?
Yeah, I know.
Some people passed on it, so. So that's why I'm here today, so I didn't let you know. So I didn't try to pull a fast one or something like that. Okay, it's time for public comment. For matters not on the agenda, if anybody wants to speak, they got a few minutes to speak.
Mr. Chair, the representative from Cathedral City is now in the room.
Thank you.
Paul Judge, please wait.
You buy the donuts. Okay, seeing no public comment, executive committee or director of comments?
I just have one, just to remind you all, at the end of our general assembly, you know, this is an important event for CBAG and like organizations that actually adopt their budget at these general assembly meetings. The general assembly is Monday, June 24th at 6 p.m. Your executive committee meeting that day will occur 2 hours in advance, which should give us plenty of time to get to the general assembly meeting. And it will be at the Agua Caliente Casino in Rancho Mirage. The only other thing to mention is at the last meeting, we did talk about Assemblyman Chad Mays and Assemblyman Eduardo Garcia's efforts to get some homelessness funding out of the governor's budget. That wasn't directly successful. There's no line item in the May revise. However, both offices are working on language that would make us specifically available for $10 million, which was the ask for homeless efforts, particularly in the western part of the Coachella Valley, but in fact, valley-wide. So we'll keep you informed about that. Many of you sent in support letters, and we know both Assemblyman's offices appreciate that. Other than that, we're set to go.
Okay. Just to make a comment that Matt and Fred have been very involved with the issue on the border. I think up to date, Blythe has had already 2,700 people come across. They dump them off in Blythe. And Manuel and the county have been doing the best they can, and everybody else, but our local people, try to do what they can with what we got. So. Okay, moving on to consent calendar. We have items A through E.
Mr. Chairman, La Quinta and District 5 from the county is now in the room.
I'm sorry, Jeff had me delayed outside for a very intense conversation.
Well, now you have to buy the donuts. The other person we can talk to.
I'll bring brownies.
Mr. Chair,
from La Quinta.
Can we pull item B as a board?
Yes, we can. Okay, can I get a motion on the consent calendar?
So moved.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Rancho Mirage votes aye for all except abstain on D.
Okay, thank you. Okay, moving on to item D then.
6B.
6B.
B. My colleague has sat on the transportation SCAG appointment CBAG for a little over 10 years, and I sit on transportation, and we have unanimously voted to place Lisa Middleton from Palm Springs on that committee. He has requested for me that he be allowed to attend the last meeting in June, and he spoke with Ms. Middleton, she's okay with it, so if we can make the appointment for July, which I'm not sure if this does that already, but he just wanted to make sure it's clear in the vote that he was able to attend the meeting.
And I think the appointment is effective July 1st, but even if it's not by your action, I'll let both parties know.
And I tried to explain that multiple times, but we wanted to make sure it was in the minutes that he was to attend the June.
Okay, do we need to add anything to the motion on this?
Why don't you add that to the motion and take a separate vote on it?
The motion is to allow Mr. Best to serve as the appointee to SCAG for transportation through June, and the new appointee be Ms. Middleton from Palm Springs.
And move the second, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. I guess my next item is closed session.
Yeah, and for those in the audience, we don't expect.
Okay, we're going to report out of closed session.
Mr. Chair, you're back from closed session. There was no oral report last meeting this afternoon.
Thank you. Okay, moving on to item 7A, CalPERS unfunded.
Thank you. As the CalPERS unfunded liability becomes a concern for all jurisdictions, staff has been tasked to look into CBAC's UAL. CBAC's formula is currently 2.55%. A little background on the formula. CBAC's formula started at 2% at 60. However, when jurisdictions started to adopt the luxury plans, the 2.5 or the 2.7 at 55 or the 3% at 60, CBAC had to up the agency's formula to 2% at 55 to stay somewhat competitive. Then the state legislation, in an attempt to rein in pension costs, created a single tier 2% at 62 for all new employees. That's where we are today, 2% 55 for classic employees and 2% 62 for the new OPEBRA employees. As per first annual evaluation report for classic employees, the June 2016 reflected an unfunded liability of $2.17 million, and the June 2017 showed an unfunded liability of $2.15 million. However, the latest report is 2 years old. In speaking with the CalPERS actuarial, the estimated unfunded liability as of June 2019 is almost $3 million due to investment experience, assumption changes, and interest. If CBAC did nothing, the unfunded liability would take care of itself over 27 years. So after looking at several scenarios and discussing with CBAC, audit, and administrative personnel committees, CBAC is recommending a one-time upfront payment of $1 million from CBAC's general fund and a 10-year level plan of $274,960 based on current numbers. This proposal will save CBAC $2.1 million in interest. The current yearly amount will also give CBAC the flexibility to increase the payment amounts to keep up with the 10-year plan should the investment experiences and assumptions changes are unfavorable. Staff will review the unfunded liability annually, and should the conditions be favorable, CBAC could accelerate the timeline. Earlier I mentioned the PEPRA or new employees. The unfunded liability in this group is minimal, and staff is also recommending that we pay it down too. So by paying down the unfunded liability of a total sum of $1,016,741, the general fund will retain a balance of $1,003,619. Staff also recognizes that paying down the liability saves Thus, in interest expense, that the agency would not have earned as much had the same amount stayed in our investment portfolio. Finally, with the passing of AB 1912, where liability of a JPA is transferred to the member agencies upon termination of the JPA, paying down the liability makes a lot of sense. Staff's recommendation is to approve paying down for CVEX CalPERS unfunded accrued liability in the amount of $1,016,741 from the general fund. The audit committee and administrative personnel committee concurs.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yeah, why aren't we paying at all? Just because we only have $2 million in the bank?
You answered the question for Seth.
That's good. No, I just the other day we voted to pay the entire amount of existing unfunded at RCTC of $8.1 million.
Wow.
And that was only saving about $7.5 million. But that's, remember, that's keeping us from kicking one more can down the road. So I like this. This is a start, but this is still something controllable because staff is relatively small. But it's showing fiscal responsibility.
And I'm part of the administrative personnel committee, and we talked about what would that do to that general fund balance. And quite honestly, we don't need the whole $2 million in the general fund balance. So we have the ability to make this chunk pay down from 27 to 10 years, still increase if need be, take care of the second PEPR piece, which is very small, and like, just better position us going forward. I'll move approval.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank
Moving
you.
On to the proposed 2019-20 budget.
Thank you. Presented to you is CBEC's draft budget for fiscal year 2019-2020. This is just an overview session and no action is required at this time. Staff would like to thank the budget subcommittee members, Mr. Bill Patterson from the city of Peshawar, Chuck Maynard from the city of Desert Hot Springs, and Mr. Isaiah Hagerman from the city of Rancho Mirage for their time on the budget. The budget subcommittee met on May 29th to discuss the draft budget with staff. As a quick summary overview, and as documented on page 23, CBEC is projecting total revenues of $149.9 million, about $27 million more than the amount budgeted in the prior year. Of that amount, $146.2 million is transportation revenue, which is $27.1 million more than the prior year. Anticipated additional other revenues for arterial projects, bridge projects to be specific, are the main reasons for the increase. Over to the community resources programs, revenues are projected at $1.9 million. That is about $210,000 increase. This is mainly due to a successful application of grant funding for the street sweeping program from the Mobile Source Reduction Committee grant. Finally, for the energy and environmental resources programs, revenues are projected at $1.7 million, a $325,000 decrease. The decrease is mainly due to the conservative approach in projecting revenues anticipated for the Desert Community Energy, as the program is still awaiting launching. As for the expenditures, reference on page 24, CBEC is projecting a total of $176.9 million, which is about $38.3 million more than the prior year. Breaking down the total into individual programs, transportation accounts for $171.4 million. This projected amount is $37.1 million more than the prior year's amount, and is mainly due to the timing of construction work on regional arterials. Expenditures for the community resources programs are budgeted at $2.5 million, $111,000 increase, mainly due to increases in homeless program professional services amount. As for the energy and environmental resources program, expenditures is at $1.8 million, which is almost identical to the prior year's amount. The administrative personnel committee met on March 25th and supported staff's recommendation on the following. A CPI increase of 3.1% for the membership dues assessment, which resulted in an increase of $13,538. Page 14 shows the breakdown of the membership dues. Also, the committee increased staffing by one position for the transportation department and a 3% cost of living salary increase. With those proposed staff and COLA increases, total salaries and benefits expenditures for the upcoming fiscal year, excluding the CalPERS pay down of $1,016,741, will reflect an increase of $136,731 over the fiscal year 18-19 budget. Finally, due to the CalPERS pay down, CBAC is projecting a deficit of $1,015,030 in the general fund for fiscal year 2019-2020. Absent of the pay down, CBAC would have realized a small surplus of about $1,700. As mentioned earlier, no action is required at this time. We will ask for your approval on the budget at the next executive committee meeting on June 24th. Between now and then, if you have any questions or suggestions on the budget, please don't hesitate to call me. This concludes staff's presentation.
Thank you.
I just got a quick question. I don't know what our practice is. I'm getting this out to the other members since they're all going to vote on it. Do we send it to city clerk to let them know? I know we usually send it out the week before, but is there any ways the budget can be sent out a couple weeks in advance since we already have it?
Yeah, well, we certainly can too. The General Assembly members.
Yeah, the budget is already on the website.
Yeah, I just kind of remind the city clerks. I have a couple members of my council that like to see the budget before they.
The next time, Joanna, next time we send a notice out reminding both folks in the General Assembly, let's link to the budget, let them know that that will be an agenda item.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you. Thank you. File.
Yeah, it's just for a presentation at this meeting. You have the next few weeks to review it. We've asked the budget subcommittee to dig into it some more too. If they have any questions or comments, we'll relate those to the executive committee at your next meeting.
Thank you.
Okay, next item is chairmanship for CBAC.
Good evening. Thank you, Mayor, and members of the committee. This is a follow-up to your last meeting where, as you'll recall, we had quite a bit of discussion about the CBAC chairmanship and our officers and whether to establish a policy. As we discussed in April, there is currently no policy on choosing a chairman, but our rotation has been generally followed over the years. CBAC staff is not making a recommendation in this case, but based on the discussion from the last meeting, we have provided some redline changes to the bylaws that could be enacted if the executive committee decides to establish a policy. These are based, again, on the recommendation that the administrative personnel committee made in March, as well as the direction expressed by the last meeting. The staff report will provide you a little bit better detail, but on the slide, as you'll see, bylaw section 2B could be amended to include that nominee shall be chosen in an order based on a rotation of CBAC member agencies that goes in this order: Caliente Band of Colia Indians, City of Indio, Cabazon Band of Mission Indians, Palm Springs, Coachella, Desert Hot Springs, Ranch and Mirage, Riverside County's 4th Supervisorial District, Blythe, La Quinta, Palm Desert, Cathedral City, Indian Wells, and then Riverside County's 5th District. That clause could also include that additional nominations, we would strike that they could be made in the General Assembly, because that would not be needed under a strict rotation. Section 2B could also add an additional clause that prior to the executive committee making said nomination, the administrative personnel committee shall review the selection of officers and may provide a recommendation to the executive committee about whether a deviation is necessary, and that this shall be considered by the executive committee prior to making its recommendation to the General Assembly. Then, in order to clarify the point about remaining with the jurisdiction rather than the individual, bylaw section 2C could be amended to include that the chairman and vice chairman position shall be designated to a member jurisdiction, which in turn will determine its representative on executive committee. Should the individual be unable to complete the term for any reason, the CBAC officer title shall remain with the jurisdiction for the entire term. Should you approve a bylaws revision, this will be presented to the General Assembly on the 24th. Again, this is outlined in probably better detail in the staff report, and I'm happy to address any questions.
And before the question, just to add, particularly for your newest colleague, the order is based on the last time the member jurisdiction represented or was on the chair of CBAC generally in the last 20 years. So, for example, Marion Ashley was our chair last year. So,
oh, okay.
Mr. Hewitt, it wasn't a bias against you, but
no, I get it.
It might take a while
to let you in the area.
I saw you looking at it, so I figured I might want to relate that to you. Any questions for Erica or me?
Yes, Scott. Sorry, I'm full of it tonight. We did speak in admin personnel, and this is kind of a concern of mine, is membership attendance. So if we do have, let's say, City X, Y, and Z decides not to start showing up to meetings, should they rotate in is a question, and how do we accomplish that? I know that we, I'll just say, the Cabazon Band of Mission Indians don't really participate very often. And so should they rotate in? You know, before Marion, District 5, I don't think participated that often, so I could be wrong. So the question is should there be a percentage of time the year before they're nominated that they have to participate to understand the issues facing CVAC?
And it's, of course, completely up to this body, and it's a political decision, not a staff one. And I know the admin committee provided a bit of a check and balance on that. And you'll see in the text that Eric has provided, the little bit of check is there's a rotation, but it'll be reviewed by the admin personnel committee, and if a proposed deviation is suggested.
But we're not always liked in admin personnel, so.
it could be reviewed, and if there's, for example, not attendance for 10 years, might be a consideration on whether they be a vice chair.
I think you need to leave it up to the jurisdiction. If they're paying their dues, you need to leave it to the jurisdiction. Let them make the choice. Do they want to accept the rotation? For example, the Cabazons, if they haven't been attending, give them the option. Say, are you willing to participate and be a member, an acting member of the body, and participate? I think we need to leave it up to the jurisdiction if they're paying their dues.
With that provision, if they're all paid up.
And well, that is obviously a provision.
It's they pay their dues every year.
Yeah.
Let me just state that.
But again, that's the element of, in the past practice, the nominating committee weighed in factors such as that, because the reality is if tomorrow they're next on the list and they're now in that chair, I would feel extremely uncomfortable given that's great they pay their dues, but it's about being here, participating, engaged, understanding the issues, and following this versus just saying, oh, it's my turn to be chair, this is great, let's put somebody in that spot. I'm sorry. That I don't feel is fair to the rest of our jurisdictions from a continuity standpoint. It's not just about the dues.
Ms. Sherman?
Yes, Kathy.
You can go first.
It would seem to me that we can solve the issue that Mayor Evans talks about by just saying that one of the conditions preceding to becoming chair is that that body had to attend at least a majority of the CVAG meetings during the preceding year. And that way they would have that. And that way we take it out of the picking and choosing of who's going to get it, you know, which favoritism is in every group. It would seem to me that we should keep it objective, but I think that issue is a good issue. You can't, you know, want somebody to come in who hasn't had any contact with the affairs of this organization. I would think that a simple amendment to the language would be very easy to accommodate.
Do you want to put that in the form of a motion?
I would move to amend.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay.
Yeah, I would move to amend the motion by including the following sentence. The city or entity next in order to be chair.
I should say vice chair, because vice chair will go on the chair.
Right.
So I would like to, when I'm trying
okay,
to.
Okay, that's good,
to,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The vice chair.
To serve as vice chair?
Yes, because he goes on the chair next time, so if he's not
right.
Participating, you follow me,
yeah,
or Chief or whatever. So.
Shall have attended at least 50% of the CVAG meetings during the prior year.
Kathleen, what do you have to say?
Well, my comment goes to the general proposal, so if you want to resolve this amendment first, then you can come back to me. I'm not sure how you want to proceed. My concern is that we're over legislating to solve a problem that doesn't exist. And whenever you do that, you're at risk of creating new unforeseen problems. The staff report summarizes the considerations that the nominating committee has used in the past. The rotation schedule, the tenure of the elected official, the official's tenure with CFAG demonstrated a level of leadership, meeting management skills, temperament satisfactory to represent the region. Those strike me as all completely appropriate factors. And as best I can tell, they've generated good results. So my view continues to be that we should just let the current practice be and not try to anticipate every possible scenario. Because if we adopt something like this, which creates an expectation, it becomes much more of a personal issue for this body to decide in some particular case that the expectation isn't going to be met. So that's my thought.
Thank you.
I would agree and concur with Councilmember Kelly's comments. I'm not opposed, since the initial part of this discussion was about ensuring the city designated gets to apply that person from their council or jurisdiction. And it was really about making sure that it was a city position versus a person position. So the recommendation for C in terms of the designated jurisdiction, I think I'm comfortable with that, but I agree with the components of keeping that flexibility and assessing them in this fashion versus having those expectations that defined.
Any other comments?
I'd like to, I'll second the motion if the maker of the motion is willing to say attendance at 75% of the scheduled meetings rather than 50%.
You willing to go to 75?
Yes.
If I might offer something, and that goes into the category of unintended consequences, it might affect the recommendation you made last time regarding next year's chairman, Mr. Groovy.
Okay.
We can carve out an exception.
Yes, we can do an exception. Okay. We already would
that's
be
why an, we don't need a policy.
It would be an awkward conversation for me to have, trust me.
Okay. We're going in that direction already, so that will, once we get through this last year, then we'll be in good shape, hopefully. But the cities, like for example, like me, if I don't make it, I have an alternative person supposed to come. So that's where I'm trying to come from. So all of us have an opportunity. Somebody's going to be here somewhere.
Right.
And they should be.
We all have an alternative.
Right. We all have alternative.
So that's where I'm coming from. So the participation is up to the town. They got to be here at least 75% of the time. I think, you know what I'm saying? I like 75%, because if I can't make it, somebody else can make it. You know what I'm trying to say? Or somebody else. If you got five people on council, somebody better be here.
Well, and I guess it goes back to what Kathleen was stating in terms of, do we need to define that, or is there an expectation that if you're paying dues into an organization, there's participation, so that you're aware whether you're going to be a vice chair or chair or not, you should be part of whatever you're assigned to be and participate. And just allowing that jurisdiction to retain the seat as that city or district, et cetera, was the initial point that Mayor Meek brought up because of the election process in Indio with Mike Wilson not being reelected. That's where this started.
Right, but I think we still left the flexibility with the personnel administrative committee to deviate if they felt that there was a circumstance.
Make recommendations.
To make recommendation to deviate. I think we're still leaving that in there if you feel that you need to have that. So I think the flexibility is still there. If there's ever going to be a situation where the body is uncomfortable with who might be rotating in based on either attendance or some other reason. I just like to see things a little more formal. being, I think, the senior member on this body at this moment, four terms, I've seen too much what I would call personal preference and not enough fairness in too many committees, including this one. And I would prefer that things be more formalized so that every city have an opportunity, regardless of personalities, regardless of politics. And I know we're a political body, but I don't like to play politics. I want us all to play fair, and I believe that this policy puts it on a playing field that is fair to everyone. And I do agree that we need to have some type of amendment so that we do hold whoever rotates into the seats feet to the fire, that they do need to participate, have some participation level, because we do have some member jurisdictions that are parties to our body but aren't participating. But I think that you do have the flexibility as a committee to be able to review whoever's turn it is to come into the rotation to make sure that we do have someone that's going to be participating as a vice chair to be able to take on the leadership role. So there's been a motion and there's been a second, so I'd be calling for the question.
Okay, any other questions? Okay.
And before you call, if I might, just to clarify, if the maker of the motion and the second agree that proposed change to the policy would start in fiscal year 21-22. The attendance record, or?
Well, it would make sense.
It would make sense after this chairman rotates out.
Yes.
So when Indio takes over.
Yeah, so 2021 would be fine too, I'm just.
Okay, you happy with that, Dana?
Yeah.
Okay, happy with the second?
How flexible we are in this, see how.
Okay, I got a motion, a second, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
I'll do opposed.
Me too.
Okay, we got two opposed. Still motion carries, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And for the record, La Quinta and Palm Desert opposed that proposed motion. That's just one piece of this. You do have the underlying policy to approve as well, or was that woven into your motion and second?
Well, it couldn't be. It was a motion for an amendment.
Yes.
Bylaws. Don't clarify what we voted on after we vote.
We voted on this, it's done. Okay.
We amended the bylaws.
Okay. All right, my apologies. I didn't understand to be that way.
Okay, we got that one taken care of. Now we move on to item D, the 2000 bicycle pedestrian
safety. I thought that was a motion to amend this proposal. That I didn't think we were voting on the underlying proposal.
Well,
was I mistaken?
That's what I thought too. That's why I brought it up.
What was before us was an amendment to the bylaws.
You want
well,
to
we assume that's correct without having somebody play back a recording for us. I think then that there should be an additional motion that you're suggesting from this side of the issue that the bylaws be amended accordingly. I think that would probably suffice.
Yeah, I need a second motion.
Well, if we look at the screen, it's very clear. If you're considering a revision, go back to what the staff report says, not those, just the potential action. Thank you. It basically talks about the automatic rotation and member jurisdiction and not an individual, right? As proposed, and you added the caveat of whatever that automatic rotation jurisdiction is, they've got to have current dues and 75% attendance. That's what I interpreted to have a fixed policy put in place via the bylaws to ensure
amending the motion. And I think you're right, Kathleen, that it takes, what we've done now is we've created the motion with amendments. Now, I would move that we pass the amendment to the bylaws as stated.
Okay with that?
Yes.
Okay, we got a motion and a second on that matter?
Second.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
So I'll see if they'll oppose. Same thing to me. With or without some requirements.
Okay.
And again, let the record note, La Quinta's and Honda's representatives are opposed.
Thank you, and now we'll move on.
And just so we're all on the same page, we will put this as a, I suppose, consent calendar item on your next executive committee agenda and offer it to the General Assembly for ratification. Okay?
Is that required in the bylaws, ratification by the General Assembly on an amendment to the bylaws?
Bylaws, yes.
Erica, isn't that the case?
That was my understanding.
Yeah.
We couldn't hear you?
Yes, that's my understanding.
Yeah, it's our understanding it would go to the General Assembly. If it doesn't, we'll still put it on the executive committee for.
We did bylaws last year.
That's in the amendment to the bylaws.
Jeff has a question.
So we can't change this order. I don't have to even worry about being chair for these 20 years.
I'm not far away.
Because I get to be chair and have to dabble or something. The rotation is, you got a lot more work to do, so it forces all of our members to step in and step up and do a bit of work. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Moving on to item D, the 2019 Bicycle Pedestrian Safety Program.
Good evening, Paxton, Chair, and Executive Committee members. So what I have tonight for you is the 2019 Bicycle Pedestrian Safety Program in the form of an ATP Preparation Fund. It's a long title, but we do want to focus on that this is still a safety project. We did the safety project in 2017 that focused on locations with accidents and fatalities, and if you recall, we had about 85, we had 30 applications, we funded 10 of them, and we covered 85% of the accidents and fatalities that were covered in the applications. So we covered a lot of ground in those locations with accidents and fatalities. We also addressed bicycle and pedestrian safety in our TBPS project. Every time we fund one, we're working on bicycle and pedestrian safety. We're also working on that bicycle and pedestrian safety in our signal synchronization program, very much addressing bicycle and pedestrian safety. So with this project, so 2017, all of those projects have either been completed or they're under construction. Some of them were held up while they waited for grant money, otherwise, but they're all either done or underway. So that's a big accomplishment. But for this year, 2019, we want to focus on the regional network as a safety project. By building out a regional network, it makes it safer for bicycles and pedestrians to move about the region. And that is contained in our active transportation plan, as I'm sure you all recall. Part of our TPPS is the active transportation plan. And that, at the regional level, is what we're suggesting funding with this program. We're suggesting funding this through design, so that's different than in 2017. In 2017, these were spot locations where there were fixes for where there were problems for accidents and fatalities where we could address those at spot locations. Now when we're looking at a regional network of bicycle and pedestrian networks, we're looking at funding it only through design because that makes them shelf ready for external funding. And as I'm sure we all know, right now there is more money available for these active transportation projects, whether it be from the federal pots or statewide pots. There's a lot of external money out there, and in almost every type of project funding pot, having your project shelf ready is an advantage, and there's points to be gained for that. And in the past, in the last cycle, or perhaps other cycles, we have missed on those points because we weren't shelf ready with our projects. We are suggesting that this be a 75% regional funding, which is what we did in the 2017 Bicycle Pedestrian Safety Project Program as well, 75%, 25%. And if you don't recall, these are the locations that we funded 2 years ago. There's a one up there in Desert Hot Springs, and it continues. A lot was in Palm Springs because of the amount of pedestrians that they have, but it did extend across the valley. So, in terms of applying for this program, it's very simple. We're looking for something coming out of our regional ATB. If you don't have a copy, I believe most cities will provide it with one, but it's on our website under the 2016 TPPS, or maybe its own link with ATB. But we ask that they be $1.5 million or larger construction projects. And this actually corresponds to the Cycle 5 call for projects that's anticipated in the spring, where for medium and large projects, the cutoff is $1.5 million. So it qualifies for the medium and large projects. They'll be shelf ready, which will give them additional points. And it kind of clarifies that these are truly regional projects in almost all cases. And we just ask that it be a project and that you have a description and maybe a handful of photos. That's it. And a budget, but the budget is already in the ATB showing the design and construction cost estimate. That's all we're asking for, because what we're going to do is we're going to pay for the design, not necessarily the construction of these projects, so that you can take your design and go shop it out to any funding pot you can find for construction. Now, the time is next two weeks from now, but again, it's just a line. And the reason it's so soon is because we want to get this done, get this engineered, or get an estimate in so that we can engineer it, so that it'll be ready in time for the spring, the anticipated Cycle 5 call for projects in California. You're just picking a project, basically. That's all the diligence that has to be done. Obviously, you have to consider it in your cities and look at what's important to you. But in terms of the actual application, you don't need to hire a consultant. You don't need fancy pages and fancy diagrams and pictures. Just the project, a description, the budget, maybe some cost estimate, photographs, and that's it. And it would be due the 14th, because at the end of this, we're going to ask for, come back to you in September, but we'll go out and get a consultant. Obviously, you're all welcome to employ your own consultants, engineering consultants, and come back with an estimate. And CBAC is going to enter into a contract, go through a qualification-based selection process, hire one or more consultants to do this work, and come back to you in September to award design contracts for these projects. So to get back to you in September with an actual cost estimate to design these projects so that they can start in October and be done in the spring, that's why it's due on June 14th. And typically, you'd all go back to your funders and hire your own engineers, and you're welcome to do that, but what we'd like to do, which is a little bit different, is offer you the ability to participate in a contract with multiple projects at the same time that we can approve in September. So even if you chose to use your own engineer, you'd still come back to us in September to approve it at the same executive committee meeting, but in this case, we would offer one engineer or two or three, or however many we need to cover these projects, and pool your project, and with it, the engineer would still work with you in your cities, but it would be one contract instead of having to manage many. So, a recommendation is to establish this program as a preparation fund, so we're funding it through design, not construction, and know that we'll come back in September. If there isn't a budget on this, there is no dollar amount, because frankly, we don't know how many applications we'll get. Are we going to get 5 or are we going to get 25? We don't know. We have the ability, though, to come back to you in September and talk to you about what we have. And we may have to meet over the summer if we have to call a giant list down. And we did receive comments when we shared this with your directors of Public Works. and then I think the Transportation Committee as well, that, hey, why not fund this through construction? Well, one of the reasons is when we did this as spot locations where we had accidents and fatalities, the projects, many of them were under $1 million. It was, you know, the highest, you know, we funded them up to $2 million, and we had to cut the 20 applications and only fund 10. But they were mostly smaller projects. Some of these projects can be, you know, Avenue 48 was $50 million. Even next door here in Palm Desert, on San Pablo, that project can be multiple millions of dollars. So that's part of the reason is that if we try to fund a lot of these projects and get them through construction, we frankly won't have the funds available, and it'll probably boil down to just a couple of projects that we could fund. But getting them to the starting line, getting them the additional points by being shelf ready, should allow them to compete. And they have competed well. Our projects have competed well from the Coachella Valley. But just last year, we missed out on two grants by only, I don't know the exact points, but just a handful of points. But had they been shelf ready, had they been through design or in design, and able to go to construction within 2 years, then we would have had the points to get funding for those projects. So that's our thought. And I guess I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Seeing no questions.
Can we do this for homeless buildings as well? Shelf ready?
If it's an AGP.
So move. Got a motion and a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next item is information.
And Aaron Sassy is here to discuss legislative items. Aaron, thank you for coming. And as you get up, kind of linking the last discussion to another item on your agenda, item 8F, I just do want to draw your attention to AB 352. Which was Eduardo Garcia's efforts to help us and Imperial County on cap and trade. And I point out two differences. On ATP dollars, don't tell anybody, but we were out competing the state in a big way. And you just doubled down on that with respect to making our projects even more competitive. On cap and trade, the story doesn't seem to be getting any better. Actually, AB 352 was gutted. In the appropriations, taking out some of the modest but important improvements to the cap and trade program that would have made the Coachella Valley and Blythe more competitive for cap and trade dollars. So we seem to be going in the wrong direction on cap and trade. And Aaron, hopefully you have better news than I'm just sharing.
Yeah, I kind of don't think so sorry. Like, you did not kick that off well, but thank you for having me here today. Last week was the deadline for bills to be heard in the House of Origin, so unfortunately a lot of bills that we hoped would make it out did. We did have a couple good wins, but before I go through those, just a couple other items. One, just a reminder, our mayors and council members executive forum is coming up on June 19th through 20th. This is the conference that's typically in Monterey. This year it's in Newport Beach. I know several of you are going. If you haven't signed up, there's still room, so I encourage you to do that. And then, I don't think I've been able to announce this to you, but Lisa Middleton from Palm Springs was recently appointed to the CalPERS board. So that actually means we have two members on the board from Riverside County, because we also have Jason Perez, who's on the Peace Ops Association with the city of Corona. So I don't know if this is very common, but I think this is really great for our area. So I definitely want to encourage all of you to reach out to both of them whenever you have CalPERS issues. Make sure you have relationships with them, because I do think it will benefit us. You may also know, because I've sent out some information, that on the June agenda for CalPERS, they did plan to have an item that had to do with the Fuller decision. It would have basically allowed CalPERS to use the Fuller decision as a precedential decision. It would have really limited your ability to contract for employees. And that agenda item has been removed. So we're really happy to hear that. We're being told it's not going to come back, but I don't want to say that that's set in stone because it has already come back this time. But that's really good news. Legislatively, mostly mostly bad, but a couple good. AB 1356, which was the teen cannabis bill. This is one that I know many of you were opposed to. If your city supported Prop 64, it would have required a certain amount of cannabis retail permits. That did not make it out of the assembly. So very good news on that front. Thank you for all of your help on that. I don't think it will be dead forever, but I think it's at least dead for now. SB 50, I know that a lot of you also were helping on this front. That did not make it out of the Senate. Really just a lot of political will. But unfortunately, there is an assembly bill. It's AB 1279 by Bloom that did make it out. And I don't know what's going to happen, but it has a lot of very similar components to SB 50. So it has to do with the high resource areas. At the request of a developer, it requires by right approvals for up to 100 units and 55 feet in commercial zones. If the project meets affordability requirements and site limitations, it has those four unit single family zones and up to 40 units per fourth acre in other zones allowing residential development. Our interpretation says that this would apply to every city based on what they're looking at as high resource areas. So
taking away the local control.
Taking away the local control. Considering that SB 50 is dead, I don't really know what they're going to do with this bill. I think it's going to be a political battle, but you should definitely all be weighing in on it. So AB 1279, Bloom, made it out of the assembly, is in the Senate. I just don't see them wanting to take it up, but they may have to. A couple other items that I wanted to bring to your attention. SB 330 is the Housing Crisis Act of 2019. This one didn't make it out of the assembly, or the Senate is in the assembly. This basically says that there's a housing crisis for 5 years, and it limits your ability to impose parking requirements and apply fees. Bad bill. AB 849 is the redistricting bill. This one has been amended a couple of times. The amendments made it just apply to cities and counties, which makes it a lot harder for us to fight. But basically, this would require four different public hearings. One has to be either on a weekend or after 6 p.m. You'll have to provide translation services for all applicable languages. So when you're going through the redistricting process, it puts all of these additional requirements on you. Like I said, it's really hard for us to battle since it just applies to cities and counties. The cost went significantly down. It made it out of the assembly, is now in the Senate. So please work on that one. Another one that I know you've all been really vocal on is AB 516 by Chu. This has to do with your your vehicle violations. It would basically eliminate your ability to enforce or place a boot on vehicles that if they haven't paid five or more parking tickets, you can't remove vehicles with expired registration tags that are operating illegally, and you can't remove vehicles that are in violation of parking time restrictions. It made it out of the assembly, it's now in the Senate. We really need phone calls at this point to Senators Roth, Stone, and Morrell, because it's likely that they'll be hearing this bill in committee next week. So if you have letters are a little bit tighter timeline, phone calls at this point would be really good, but bad bill for our cities. Another one that made it out is AB 392. This is the one that has to do with the deadly force with our peace officers. It did make it out of the assembly and is now in the Senate. I know a lot of you already sent letters. I want to encourage you to continue to do so. Work with your police departments to get letters in as well. On a more positive note, SB 5, which is the bill that would bring back a form of redevelopment. There was two, AB 11 and SB 5. SB 5 is the one that's pretty much moving forward at this point. It did make it out of the Senate and is in the assembly. And they may, I'm not really sure if they're going to incorporate some of the AB 11 spots, but that is the vehicle and we're supporting that. One other bill I just wanted to bring to your attention. I know some of you have scooters, allow them, don't allow them, but AB 1112 by Friedman would eliminate the ability for cities to fully regulate corporations that offer the shared motorized scooters. So you should all be watching out for that one as well. Sorry, not a lot of good news, but at least the teen bill died. Yeah, that'd be good. But thank you for all of the help that you've been giving me. I know that we have a lot more work to do. Happy to take any questions.
Any questions?
Thanks for the work you do, Eric.
Thank you.
Okay, I guess we have our next meeting, the executive committee meeting, June 24th at 4 p.m.
And the general assembly is June 24th, same day at 6 p.m. And I guess we're adjourned. Thank you.